Chapter 8. An Interlude in Lake Town.
The other dwarves came out of the river no happier than Thorin, and most were a great deal worse for wear. Feely and Keely, whose barrels had been well lined with straw, were the best off. Their journey had been more or less comfortable, though tedious, and they were able to stretch their sore limbs and help Bella and Thorin free the others.
"Come on, old man,"
Keely said, dragging Dwalin up the bank by an arm.
"Oof! Feely, I need a hand."
"Give me a moment,"
Feely called back, trying to pry Bomber loose from his own barrel. "Here now, I don't like this any better than you, but try to help, at least." But Bomber would only lie there, senseless, and it took Feely and Thorin together to break the barrel into pieces around him and drag him from the water.
"Worst day of my life,"
Beaufort slurred, as soon as Bella fought free the lid covering him. He didn't even bother to stand, just crawled up the bank and collapsed in a heap next to his brother.
"We had our weapons,"
Glowin groaned, checking the edge on his axes.
"We should have fought our way out properly, not crept off in the night like rats."
"Aye,"
said Dwalin, scowling toward the river.
"Next time, do us a favor and just leave us to rot."
"Enough!"
Bella shouted, pointing her finger at Dwalin.
"I skulked around those wretched dungeons for days with barely any food or sleep. I carried your messages and kept your spirits up while you rested near your cells, waiting for me to do the impossible and find a way out. Which I did. Alone. And not only are you free of your prison, you are through the forest and within sight of your mountain. And still you complain. Well, I am sorry your trip was uncomfortable. Perhaps next time, like me, you can cling desperately to the outside of a barrel as it floats all night in a cold river. And I will stay safe and dry and wait for you to rescue me."
And then she burst into great, heaving sobs that were as much from relief as anger. Feely, who'd been approaching Dwalin with a very hard look in his eyes, changed course and headed for Bella, but Thorin got there first. Wordlessly, he put an arm around Bella's shoulders and gently pulled until they were seated on the muddy ground. Only then did he look back towards the others, sharply enough that even those who had said nothing flinched away.
"I am sure what everyone meant,"
he said pointedly,
"was to thank you for everything you've done on their behalf."
"No, no," wept Bella. "I'm sorry. I know you all had a miserable time in those wretched things. I do beg your pardon. I'm just feeling poorly."
"What's wrong?"
Keely asked, planting himself on her other side and pressing his palm against her cheek.
"You're ice cold."
"I just need some food and a bit of rest," she said, closing her eyes and leaning into his hand.
"Of course we're all grateful, Bella. You know that,"
Dora began, but Thorin cut him off.
"Apologize later. Right now we must make for the town and hope that its people are feeling kindly disposed toward travelers."
The people of Lake Town were very kind indeed, and the excitement over their visitors, whose appearance might signify their own upcoming change in fortune, spread through the town like fire. Children who saw them in the streets ran home to tell their parents, and soon there were crowds peering out of doorways as they passed, whispering among themselves and pointing if they were bold.
"The king returns," they said to each other. "The king under the mountain has come back."
The master of the town met them outside of his great hall, surrounded by a contingent of armed guards and the elven raftmen who had escorted the barrels down the river.
"That is them," one nodded toward the company. "Those are the prisoners who trespassed on our lands and escaped our king's justice."
"Is this true?"
asked the master, looking as if he hoped it was, so that he might send them off with the elves and be done with them.
"It is true that we were wrongfully detained on our journey through Mirkwood,"
Thorin said, staring straight ahead, forcing the elves and men to step back in order to meet his gaze.
"It is also true that we have returned to reclaim our homeland. I am Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thrar, who is king under the mountain."
This announcement caused a great ruckus among the townspeople, many of whom had been following silently as the company progressed through the streets. Children shrieked and sidled as close to the dwarves as they dared, which was still well out of arm's reach, and some of the elders began to sing old songs heralding the king's return.
"Why do you stop my companions and I outside your door, as if we were no better than common beggars, come to ask for scraps?"
Thorn continued, tilting his head so the silver chain around his neck flashed in the sunlight. Sensing the mood had shifted against him, the master ushered them inside, giving Thorn his own place at the head table, and seating the others around him. The elves left quickly, no doubt to report to their king the fate of his missing prisoners. Once food was put in front of them, the spirits of the dwarves improved considerably, and they tucked into the meal with gusto. "Ugh," said Feely, shoving a plate of baked apples away from him. "Slide this down the table, would you, Keely? I can't bear to look at an apple right now. My barrel reeked of them."
"Shame that," Keely said, taking a large bite directly off the serving tray. "Delicious!"
Feely paled, and with a sigh, Bella reached over to move the plate herself. But her sigh turned into a harsh cough, which went on so long she bent double with the force of it, leaning on her arm over the table.
"You said food would make you better,"
Keely said, half out of his chair. "Food and rest," she said, waving him back into a seat. "A night's sleep in a proper bed, and I'll be right as rain, I'm sure." Keely looked toward Feely, who shook his head. "I think Owen ought to have a look at you," he said, running a hand over her back.
"I agree,"
said Thorn, rising to his feet.
"Keep an eye on her while I see about lodgings."
"None of that will be necessary," Bella said, sitting up straight. "I've taken a chill, that's all.
If you can make it to a count of 10 before you cough again, I will run and tell Thorin not to bother,"
Feely said, sounding terribly sure of himself. 1, 2, 3. Bella coughed, and then glared at him through narrowed eyes.
"Not a word."
"Here," he said, handing her a cup. "Drink. You'll feel better." She did, sighing as the cool liquid passed her throat. "You were right, you know, earlier," Feely said, taking the cup from her limp fingers when she was through. "It's our turn to take care of you now, so let us help you to bed, and let Owen have a look at you. It's little enough, after all you've done, and it will make us feel better."
"You make it hard to object when you're so reasonable," she complained. "How does anyone ever win an argument against you?"
"Very few dwarves respond to logic," he grinned at her. "Keely would have punched me in the face by now." They were put up in an empty house near the edge of town. It was small, but the lower level was spacious enough for 13 pallets, once the furniture was pushed against the walls, and there was a little bedroom upstairs for Bella.
"Why are they helping us?"
she asked, as Feely got her settled under a wool blanket. He and Keely climbed up on the bed after her, and she leaned against their sides for the warmth.
"They have much to gain from the re-establishment of the old trade routes,"
Thorn explained, glancing impatiently at the doorway.
"If we are successful, they may even plan to rebuild the city of Dale, which was destroyed when Smaug took the mountain."
"So it was not only the dwarves who lost their home," she said sympathetically, and Owen entered the room before Thorin could respond, with the other dwarves in tow.
"She has been coughing,"
Thorin said, hauling Keely off the bed and out of Owen's way.
"And her skin is chilled."
"May as well stop talking,"
Owen said, leaning Bella forward and placing a hand over her back.
"Can't hear a word. Deep breath now, Hobbit."
Bella tried, but her muscles shuddered harshly as she forced air into her lungs, and another coughing fit overcame her. Owen put a hand on her forehead, then squeezed her jaw.
"Open up. Let's have a look,"
he said, peering into her mouth.
"As I suspected,"
he nodded.
"Infection."
"In her chest?"
Thorin asked, his fingers gesturing gracefully along with his words, for Owen's benefit.
"Isn't that dangerous?"
"Can be,"
Owen nodded, and Keely scrambled back onto the bed, making a place for himself by Feely.
"Lots of rest, keep her warm, and tea, plenty of tea."
"I'll see to it," said Dory, already heading towards the door. "Does anyone know her preferred blend?"
"Something to help her sleep,"
ordered Thorin.
The rest of you, out.
Nobody moved.
Was I unclear?
Thorn growled. Clear enough, Balin said, smiling placatingly. But the lass is sick on our account, and I don't think any of us are keen to leave her. Oh, it was not your fault, Bella began, but Dwalin shook his head.
Nah, you were right,
he said, kicking at the doorframe.
You had it the hardest, back in that thrice-cursed dungeon, and then in the river. Shouldn't have carried on so, ungrateful wretches though we are.
Anyhow, we're all sorry, Beaufort said, and we'll make amends any way we can.
That is all well and good,
Thorn said.
But she is tired now, and ill. Your amends must wait until tomorrow, at the earliest, unless you would see her worsen.
That sent them shuffling out, with regretful looks and promises to return in the morning.
That means you two, as well.
Thorin said, glaring over Bella at his nephews. Feely looked incredulous. You're not serious. Of course we're not going anywhere. She might need something. Please, can't they stay? Bella pleaded, closing her eyes. I'd rather not be by myself. Thorin frowned.
I'd thought to... Yes, fine,
he said, shaking his head.
But the slightest disturbance, and I'll have Dwalin haul them out by their ears. And Keely, get your boots off the bed.
Keely got up sheepishly and walked around to the other side of the bed, shucking his boots and outerwear as he went. Feely did the same on his side, and in a moment Bella was between them. It was a tight fit, even in a man-sized bed, and the dwarves had to contort a bit to avoid crowding her. We'll be fine, Uncle, Feely said, and Thorn rolled his eyes despairingly.
You'll have lost her under the bed by morning,
he predicted, shoving Keely's things into a neat pile.
That was a bullfrog, and I was 20!
Keely protested, blushing.
It's a bigger bed. There's room enough,
Thorn grumbled as he closed the door to the hallway behind him. Bella's cough was no easier the next day, and her skin had gone from chilled to flush and overwarm. Owen pronounced it a good sign, but nobody felt easy, seeing her so still and quiet. Dorian Balin sat with her in the morning, ostensibly to keep an eye on things while Feely and Keely got breakfast, but neither left when Feely returned, and over the course of the morning the rest of the dwarves made their way into the little room. They spent the day talking and seeing to their weapons, and Dorian and Balin took turns reading out loud from Bella's book, which everyone seemed to find interesting. She did better for the company, and by mid-afternoon her fever had come down enough that Owen declared her past the worst of it, though she still felt tired and out of sorts. "I hope you're well enough to come down for supper," Feely said, wiping at her forehead with a cool cloth. "Keely's been in town all day, mending pots and pans for coin. He said he promised you a cake." "You're not serious," Bella said, remembering the laden table from the night before. "We could have just asked for one. There may already be a cake here."
"But then it wouldn't be from Keely," he grinned. "Besides, it's good for him. He likes the work, and it wouldn't do to let his skills get rusty."
"Is there even work for him? Surely they have a local man for that," Bella said.
Glone snorted. "Who would choose a man over a dwarf for their repairs? And some will be keen to test his mettle for the novelty, if nothing else."
"Besides, he's always been popular among the wives, our Keely."
Feely winked.
"When he was younger, they'd pinch his cheeks. Now, well, he just gets pinched."
All the dwarves laughed, even Thorin, to Bella's great delight. The sight of him, relaxed and amused enough to smile, was rare enough that she almost felt she ought to make a note of it, wherever such things were tallied.
"Do not make light of Keely's skills,"
Thorin said, when he had regained his composure.
"He is a fine tinker. Give him 100 years, and he'll be better still."
"I would never,"
Keely snickered, not quite under control.
"He is very good, far better than I."
"Keely finds joy in seeing broken things mended. You take no pleasure in such work, and it shows."
Feely shrugged. I cannot delight in fixing what was poorly made to start with. Not when I could be making something of my own.
Oh, what do you make, Feely?
Swords? Bella asked, craning her neck to get a better look at the knife he was cleaning.
I have, though they're not so fine as my uncle's, Feely said, sheathing the blade.
He is a jeweler,
Thorne said, laying a hand on his nephew's shoulder.
With skills enough to rival a dwarf twice his age.
Feely blushed. That is not true, and I haven't worked with anything really fine, so I'd hardly call myself a jeweler.
He made a pair of earrings that fed us for a month,
Thorne boasted.
Salvaged the stones from some ill-made trinket he and Keely picked up on one of their outings. Garnets, I believe.
Feely rolled his eyes. Thorne, everyone has heard that story 100 times.
I can hear it 100 more, and I will not be tired of it,
Thorne said.
When we reach Erebor, you will have gems enough to practice on. That I promise.
Well, I hadn't heard it, and I think it's lovely, Bella said. I can't wait to see something you've made.
I'll do you up some proper beads when I can get the materials,
Feely said, tugging on one of her braids. Don't expect too much, though. I'm not so talented as my uncle claims.
Let him be proud, said Dwalin. He's all thumbs with delicate work. There's a fine blade, though. I'll give him that. You should speak with more care,
Thorne said, tipping his chair back.
Or I'm liable to forget myself and tell stories of our apprenticing days. You know the one I mean. You swore that would go down with us to our tombs.
Dwalin growled, shoving at Thorin, who toppled against the bed. He hooked Dwalin's knee with a foot as he went down, tripping him into Ori, and causing Dori to fling him into Glowin and Bomber in his haste to check on his brother. In a moment, only Bella and Feely, who was sitting cross-legged at the foot of her bed, weren't part of the chaotic rumble.
I feel as if we ought to do something,
Bella said, wincing as Nori bit down on Beaufort's hand.
Let them have their fun, said Feely, reaching up to catch a teacup out of the air.
Well, in that case...
Bella giggled as Thorne yanked Feely over the side of the bed. They tussled for a bit. Thorne had the advantage of height and experience, but Feely was terribly quick, twisting out of every hold Thorne tried to use to pin him. When Balin overturned the teacup onto Dwalin's head, Bella found herself laughing so hard that her cough returned, and all she could do was press a hand against her chest and grope blindly at the bedside table for her cup of water.
Enough!
Yelled a voice from the doorway, and everything came to a standstill as Keely stormed into the door. He moved directly to her bedside, walking over Beaufort and Dori in the process, and put the cup directly into her still searching hand before turning to address the room.
I don't know what is going on here,
he said, glaring at each of the dwarves in turn.
But my sister is ill. She needs rest and quiet and someone to hand her the blasted water when she coughs. Even I know that. Now, the townspeople have brought us dinner, so you'd better go downstairs and eat and get a hold of yourselves, or I will throw you out and tend to her myself.
Most of them filed out, grumbling and looking abashed, and he nodded, satisfied. He turned to Bella.
What's wrong?
He asked, her stunned expression.
It was like seeing Thorne in miniature,
she said, eyes wide. Is that really my Keely?
What a question! He smiled, and she felt reassured immediately.
Miniature?
Oh, Keely,
called Feely from the doorway.
Did you get...
Shh!
Keely interrupted him, looking meaningfully at Bella from the corners of his eyes.
Yes, I got it. Oh, curse it, it's on the table and Bomber's down there. I'll be back, Belle,
he said, as he ran out the door, with Feely laughing as he followed. Only Thorne remained by her bedside, with Dori hanging back by the door, something clearly troubling him.
Are you coming down?
He asked Thorne, frowning.
Because it isn't proper, leaving you in her bedroom, I mean.
He bit his lip, then straightened, ready to hold his ground.
Quite right,
Thorne said, rising from his chair and moving to the doorway.
We should all talk in any case. We have plans to make for a departure.
Dori left the room, appeased, and Thorne shut and bolted the door behind him. Bella could not help but laugh. I had not taken you for a trickster.
There was no falsehood. I should join the others,
he said as he returned to her bedside, eyes lit with humor. But here you are.
Perhaps I've missed our talks.
You chose your moment poorly, then. He'll be watching me sleep very shortly, she murmured, leaning back against the headboard.
It could be that I missed that, too.
She smiled. You are in a strange mood today. He righted one of the chairs near the head of her bed and took a seat.
Yes, I ought to apologize. As I recall, you prefer me surly. But I cannot help feeling lighter of heart, with the mountain so close.
Did I say that? She asked, closing her eyes. How wrong I was. I like seeing you smile much better. She drifted at the edge of sleep for a while, lulled by the touch of a cool hand on her forehead and a low voice coming from far away. Eventually, she opened her eyes and snapped them shut against the light of the setting sun.
Hiduzi, do you wake?
She blinked, then forced her eyes open. What's that? Thorn brushed her hair out of her face.
I asked if you were sleeping.
No. She turned her face into her pillow. You called me something. I heard it. He smirked at her pout.
A fever dream, perhaps.
She smiled, amused and still half sleeping. Mama used to call me her little pretty. Was it something like that? Pretty, I mean. I know you think me little.
Pretty?
He mused, pulling her blanket straight over her shoulders.
No, I would not have said that.
She frowned, and he smiled wider.
Pretty is for quartz and river stones. You are nothing so common. There is a light in you that outshines even the Arkham stone, Haribor's great treasure.
Oh. She locked her gaze on the bedsheets, flushed in a way that had nothing at all to do with her fever. So, she paused, reaching for something, anything to say to that. It's nice, is it? This Arkham stone. He leaned back in his chair, one hand still resting on the edge of her bed.
It is the heart of the mountain, and unique among all other gems, which look dull and plain beside it. My grandfather considered it a blessing on our line, and mounted it above his throne as a symbol of his right to rule. So yes, I suppose you would call it nice.
You are mocking me. Bella looked at him through narrowed eyes. That isn't kind, when I feel so ill. His grin turned smug.
I'm a poor nurse. If you want comforting, I'll send for the others.
No! Bella laid a hand on his arm. No, I'm happy like this. With just you. She stammered. Thorn brushed a finger over her burning cheek.
I don't understand it. Here you lie, pale and ill and far thinner than you should be, and I cannot bring myself to look away.
Bella tried to laugh, but it hurt her throat too much. I think that was meant to be a compliment, but I'm not certain.
You are lovely,
Thorn said, and his smile fell away, replaced by a look of surprise or determination. Bella could not decide which.
When you pulled me from the river, soaking and bedraggled as you were, I thought you were the loveliest thing I had ever seen. I think the same now. I do not expect I will ever stop thinking it.
Stunned, Bella tried to reply, but could not bring herself to make a sound. She could feel her heart beating too fast against her ribs, and her eyes blurred with dizziness.
I can make no promises now,
Thorn went on, his voice growing rougher.
I have nothing worthy to give you, but when I am king...
There was a long pause.
In Erebor, we will talk again. The conversation will go differently.
If I were to speak of such things, Bella said slowly, not meeting his eyes. It would make no difference if the one who held my heart was a king or a blacksmith. And I would not care if we lived beneath a mountain, or in my little hole under the ground. And certainly, she said, buoyed by the way he leaned closer, it would not matter, not even a bit, what gifts he could give me. As gently as she had seen him do anything, Thorn tipped her chin up, forcing her to meet his stare, and suddenly she understood what the elf had meant when he spoke of feeling set ablaze. "There's a dragon at the end of this road," she said, linking their hands. "Should we not take what happiness we can, while we may?"
"Your feelings are a credit to you,"
Thorn murmured.
"But a king is what you deserve. I cannot offer you less."
She opened her mouth to protest, but stopped when he squeezed her fingers.
I wish to tell you,"
he said, scowling as he searched for the right words.
"Since I started this journey, I have known the madness in my blood might overcome me, should we somehow succeed. It has been my shadow these many years, and all my life I've been on guard against it."
He brought a hand to her brow, running a thumb along her temple as he continued.
"I do not fear it now. There is no more room in my heart for gold, and I could walk through any dragon's hoard and see only stones and metal. Another treasure has ensnared me, finer and rarer than any jewel."
He paused, and Bella held her breath.
"Until Erebor is reclaimed, my life is not my own to pledge. I committed it long ago to the restoration of my people. But whether I live or the Great Worm takes me, you have saved me yet again. I would have you know that, whatever else may come."
"I suppose that must sustain me," she said, when she could speak again. "Is the mountain visible from this room?"
"Yes,"
he said, brows raised, as if he had expected to hear something else.
"If you stand by the door."
"Help me," she commanded, trying to sit up, and he lifted her into his arms without hesitation. "Not quite what I meant," she said, as they crossed the room.
"Shush,"
he murmured into her hair.
"Do you see it?"
"Yes," she whispered, gazing past the window and the wooden buildings of the town, and the lake and fields beyond it, all the way to the peak of the lonely mountain. It loomed ominously over the horizon, but looking at it now, she felt more than dread. The fear was there still, but it was mingled with hope and stubbornness and anticipation. For once, she was eager for them to be on their way again. Yes, there was a dragon at the end of their road, but beyond that, there was a treasure.